The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. It is December the 19th, 2016 on this Monday. I don't know how your Monday started off, but my Monday did not start off all that well. As we were trying to live stream today's entrepreneur, which comes on Black Talk Radio Network on Mondays at 11 a.m. Eastern. I think that's 8 a.m. Pacific where she is. And just the communication system just would not allow me to dial in. I could not use any communication, digital or electronic communication system that I use via the internet to do our programs. And so we did eventually get that program on air, but that was not a good way to start out my day, but we have recovered. I'm not going to bore you with the things that I have to deal with sometimes behind the scenes for the network, but let's get on and lay out some of the news items that I want to share with you today on BTR News. The main story that I'm looking at, which I made the title for today's broadcast, Obama is helping to keep the DNC out of abolitionist hands. Now, at first, I was going to put progressive hands, and I actually did put that before I changed it to abolitionist, because progressive is how they want to label Keith Ellison. They want to label him as, and he is part of the progressive caucus. And again, we're talking about politics. This is a political news show, although we delve into a lot of different social issues. But if I'm of the belief that politics controls just about every people activity area on the planet. And so, as I've been mentioning, you've been having this civil war that is happening in the DNC, also between the people who are really in charge of the whole affair, whether they be Republicans, Democrats. I'm talking about the big money donors. There's a civil war for power, whose agenda is going to get pushed through, whose social agenda as well as economic agenda is going to get pushed through. But focusing on the Democratic Party, they just can't seem to learn their lesson on so many things. But I thought it was pretty low down and dirty for Obama to try to prevent Keith Ellison. And that's what he's doing. I don't care what kind of language they're trying to use to say, oh, he didn't say anything about Keith Ellison. He was just promoting his guy. I think it's the labor secretary, Tom Perez, something. I don't know that much about Tom Perez, but I know a little something about Keith Ellison. And I do know he has been behind some abolitionist bills. The bill that is in Congress to abolish private prisons and jails in the United States. That is something that he was part of that caucus to get that bill put into Congress that does not seem like President Obama is going to sign it on his way out the door. And see, that's a major sticking point in the Democratic Party. A lot of people perhaps are not aware of. You got your pro-slavery people, and then you got your anti-slavery people. And I would put Keith Ellison in the anti-slavery category, and I'll put Barack Obama in the pro-slavery category, being that he backed the Clintons. And we know their contributions to modern day slavery and human trafficking. So I thought it was pretty low down and dirty for him to be on his way out and trying to stop the Democratic Party from pivoting to the left in terms of their politics. But I'm speaking specifically of Keith Ellison as an abolitionist, because he supports and he helped push through an abolitionist bill, one of the very few abolitionist bills to actually make it into Congress, but it's yet to be voted on. So that's the bill to it's called the Justice Is Not For Sale Act. Let me see. Another story I'll take a look at: Democrats and their neoconservative Republican allies keep pushing fake news that Russia hacked the U.S. elections. While now, as I stated on last week, where are the state news coming out of the different states from the election boards? And because every state has to certify its elections, where are the reports of any kind of hacking into their voting machines, anything about vote flipping, voter fraud? And again, now we're starting to get some articles saying that election fraud in the states, that there was next to zero. Now, there were a bunch of people filing complaints to say, oh, so-and-so wasn't eligible to vote, or this looks fishy, this ballot or this registration, and they challenged those, but none of those challenges, except for maybe one, panned out where there might have actually been some fraud. But again, this is a non-existent problem that mostly Republicans push so that they can garner public support to fix a problem that's not a problem, like voter fraud. And that is why you got all those pushes for voter ID bills. They kept saying voter fraud, but there were never any evidence. So since there's no evidence of any kind of fraud, why are Democrats and their allies still talking about the election being hacked? And so I got a couple of thoughts on that. The Electoral College meets today, and so for those who don't know how the Electoral College works, when you go to vote in a presidential election and you cast a ballot for the president, what you are indeed casting a ballot for is an elector. Either if the person you're voting for to become the next CEO of USA Inc., if they are Republican, then you're actually casting a vote for an elector in your state that you are telling that person that I want you to vote for whatever candidate I pick. So you're actually electing electors and telling them how you want to vote. So whoever wins the popular vote in a state wins that state's electors. And those electors make up the Electoral College. So the Electoral College meets today. I don't think they actually vote. Maybe they vote on a state level just to, you know, to settle up the state business. But then later, I think it is in January, where they will Electoral College votes will be counted in Congress. So that's some of the formalities and what have you. But you have a bunch of big money Democrats, liberals, whatever you want to call them, and their allies who are asking these electors to violate the rules in their state. And in some states, it's a misdemeanor crime. If you are an elector and you are bound to vote the way that your state went, and no, there's nothing stopping you from voting the other way. But in some states, there are penalties. But you are breaking the rules if you don't. I thought it kind of, I guess, I don't know what's the proper word I'm looking for, but par for the course for Democrats to be calling on electors to break the rules, being that that's one of the reasons that they cite that they lost the election, because they're falsely claiming, I've seen no evidence that Russia hacked the DNC from sources I've seen, they said that was an inside leak. Somebody on the inside didn't like the dirty shenanigans that was going on, so they leaked it into the hands of WikiLeaks, and they published it. So the Democrats been pushing around this myth that the Russians hacked it, and that if the public, the voting public, did not see that the DNC and the Clinton campaign was breaking the rules for the nomination process during that Democratic primary season, that, oh, if they didn't know that the DNC and Hillary Clinton, that they were cheaters and they were breaking the DNC rules just to hand her the nomination, then people might have voted for Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, do you see the irony in all of this? Do you really see it? They're blaming emails, blaming on Russia. It don't matter how the emails got out there at this point. But the emails showed that they were breaking the DNC rules. Now, they are openly calling for what? Other people, the electors, to break the rules. It seems to me they didn't learn any kind of lesson on ethics or anything of the sort. They just don't have a clue. They just really don't. They are living in a bubble somewhere. I don't know. But for us to see all of the criminality, all of the unethical behavior, and like, you know, we weren't supposed to pay attention to that? Or we're not supposed to take that into consideration as we decide what electors we're going to send to Washington, D.C. to decide who's president? Yeah, so what do y'all think about that? Ben Carson, here talking about corruption. I don't want people to think I'm a partisan person. I just pick on Democrats. I'm a nonpartisan person. Just call me an objective observer of politics in this country. That's why I do a political news show. But remember when Ben Carson doing the nomination process and the Republican Party was still trying to determine who was going to be their nominee, and they were going to the different states. Do y'all remember when Ben Carson flew down to meet with Trump at, I forget the name of that hotel that he owns, Key Largo or something like that. It might have been in Key Largo. I'm not sure. But remember Ben Carson met with him, went down there and met with him. And this is when the Republican, you still had more, the race had not been decided at that point. Anyway, so Donald Trump apparently was courting Ben Carson for his nomination, and they met in Florida. Do y'all remember that? Because I clearly remember that. And afterwards, Carson comes out and says, didn't really say what they talked about, but said that he might be considered for a Trump cabinet position. And if he, you know, and he went and endorsed him. Yeah, the meeting was to get Carson to endorse Trump. This is when Ted Cruz, that slime ball, was still in the race and whatnot. So Carson went down there and met with him, and he later would endorse Donald Trump. Well, it's illegal to do that. I remember it at the time. I looked up the law. I can't remember it right now or what they call it. But that's like you can't trade cabinet position appointments for an endorsement. That's illegal. And I believe that is what we saw here. So for those who's trying to block Ben Carson from becoming the next HUD secretary, that's housing and urban development, a job that he has no training in, no background in, and based off some comments he's made about public housing, if you care about poor people, if you care about struggling people trying to make it into the middle class but need a little help, then you may not want to see Ben Carson become the next HUD secretary. So I'm just giving you some ammunition to write your senators for when they had a Senate confirmation hearing, point out the fact that he endorsed Donald Trump just to get a cabinet appointment. And that's illegal. So if they want to go along and break the law, well, you just telling us, revealing to us, if we don't already know what your character is. So that's a story I will share some more details with. Now, this one, Again, I come across a lot of news. I share it mostly on btrcommunity.com. That's our news social media platform, as we try to facilitate people trying to leave Facebook and look for a safer place in order to do what it is they do, their networking, whether that's through social activism or what have you. That's just a place where we share. So because I don't have enough time to share everything that I feel like I need to bring to your attention during this hour, sometimes hour and a half, hour 45 minute program. So, but there, this is a story. I was like, I have to share this. A new book came out, and I haven't figured out from Fox News if this guy is a CIA analyst or if he's a military officer, retired CIA analyst, retired military officer. I don't know if he was doing double duty and pulling two checks from the government. I don't know. They really didn't make that clear. But he is looking to capitalize off the capture of Saddam Hussein during the last invasion. We'll call it Gulf War II. I participated unwittingly in Gulf War I, but they did not overthrow the Iraqi government at that time. They left Saddam Hussein in power with a no-fly zone to the south and over the areas where the Kurds were at. So apparently this guy was in once they caught Saddam Hussein. Remember, they really highly publicized that, how he was hiding in a spider hole, a hole in the ground, and they had gotten some intelligence and they found him hiding. Well, of course, they interrogated him, obviously. So this person participated in this interrogation. I guess enough time has passed. Some of the information has been declassified, but now he's looking to capitalize off of it. He's looking for a whole bunch of people to spend money on his book. Hopefully he's hoping to become a millionaire, and he's going to be given the hero's treatment and all. And this guy's probably a criminal. He is a criminal. I say he's a criminal. But anyway, Fox News produced a propaganda piece about his book, but it is evident that there were never, even by his book, some of the excerpts and some of the things that's in the article. I do have the audio to the interview he did on Fox News, but the article, which I've linked to, has more information. But it is clear, according to this man, that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. Like Donald Trump said, and these the people that you gonna believe, they told you Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and he did not, and you want to believe them when they, some unnamed CIA person says that Russia hacked the election. Again, the election was not hacked. The DNC had a leak, and they're just trying to confuse people with words and get them caught up in a bunch of emotion that's going to lead to nowhere. So those are some of the news stories that I want to go over with you. And if you have something to add, if you have any questions or comments, you can join us from anywhere in the world. Obviously, you have to have an internet connection to be hearing this program, but you can connect with us at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Or you can go to uberconference.com/blacktalkradionetwork. You can dial in that way with your comments or questions. You can dial in by phone to 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. The other number, if you have problems getting in through that way, is 704-802-5056. That is 704-802-5056. So let's go ahead and jump into this first article. Let me just pull it up. This comes to you via the Huffington Post, and let me just pull that up. Again, I've linked to this in the program description for today on blacktalkradionetwork.com. I don't have them posted in YouTube, but you can find them on Black Talk Radio Network. Zach Carter wrote this article. I guess it's Zach Carter and Daniel Moranz. He's a reporter for the Huffington Post. Zach Carter's the senior political economy reporter for the Huffington Post. They published this article just 3 days ago. It's been shared almost 5,000 times. And the title of the article says that Obama all but endorses Tom Perez against Keith Ellison for the Democratic National Committee chair. Now, what position are we talking about? We're talking about the position that Florida Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz held that position, the Democratic National Chair. The emails revealed, the email leak, not hack, the email leak showed that she was cheating and she was breaking rules because, you know, Hillary Clinton was entitled to the nomination and we're just going to make sure she gets it, even if we have to do some unethical things and like not have debates because we don't want Hillary Clinton being asked a bunch of questions because she got too much dirt, too many skeletons in the closet, too many things that she can be hit on. And so we're going to limit the number of the Democratic debates. So she was forced to resign. She cheated. These emails also are the subject of a class action lawsuit. There's a class action lawsuit right now in federal court against the DNC for cheating, not only Bernie Sanders, but all the other people who, it wasn't a whole lot of them, maybe two or three other ones, but cheating those people out of a quote-unquote fair shot at the nomination by doing things to clearly favor Hillary Clinton. It's in their emails. They might as well just go ahead and settle that lawsuit. I hate to tell Keith Ellison, but the DNC may be broke, man. They may have to file for bankruptcy depending upon the outcome of this lawsuit because of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, again, who was forced to step down. Now, then she was replaced, and this is the current DNC chair, Donna Brazile. Y'all remember Donna Butter Biscuit Brazile? She was the quote-unquote CNN political analyst, political hack, whatever you want to call those political operatives that work with the media to pull the wool over the eyes of the masses. Well, Donna Brazile, she replaced Debbie Wasserman Schultz. What did Donna Brazile do? Well, using her connection, her employment at CNN in conjunction with News One and Roland Martin, well, they took some of the debate questions and gave them to Hillary Clinton, gave her the questions in advance so she could come up with a tailor-made answer for it. That's cheating. And guess what? She lost her job. That's the current DNC chair, right? So anyway, just wanted to give you some background on what position we're talking about. This is an important position in the Democratic Party, and Keith Ellison, who backed Bernie Sanders during the primaries, is running for that position. Let me continue with the article, because now you got Obama trying to stop Keith Ellison. And I reported last week with the Anti-Defamation League participating in doing a hit job on Keith Ellison, trying to make it look like he hates Jews or he don't like Jews and I hate to use the words they use, like anti-Semitism, because Semitism, a lot of people are using that word incorrectly. They are using the word Semite incorrectly. Palestinians are closely related to Semitic people in that area of the world than the Ashkenazi Jews that come out of Russia and Germany, that area of the world. They are more Semitic than your Khazarian, your mountain Jews of Russia. They're not Semitic. So people, don't let them fool you with words. You have to look up the definition of words. So anyway, they try to play like he's so anti-Semitic or he don't like let's say anti-Jewish. No, he's not. Or else why would he endorse Jewish Bernie Sanders over the vicious white woman known as Hillary Clinton. If he was so anti-Jewish, why he co-signed on to helping Bernie Sanders, who's a Jew? All right, so again, man, so this is all part of that. This is, again, part of the civil war that's going on. You got many civil wars in politics going on, right, simultaneously. And this is a civil war, an important one that's going on in the Democratic Party. So they start off by saying that there had been any doubts, President Barack Obama expunged them on Friday afternoon. The outgoing president wants his labor secretary, Thomas Perez, to succeed him as the top figure in the Democratic Party. Tom Perez has been, I believe, one of the best secretaries of labor in our history, Obama said at his end-of-year press conference. This week, Perez challenged Representative Keith Ellison in the race to chair the Democratic National Committee. Obama did not mention Ellison by name in his remarks. For weeks, the Obama administration has been a principal holdout in a D.C.-based effort to unite the warring wings of the Democratic Party behind Ellison. The Minnesota liberal was the most prominent Capitol Hill supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders during the presidential primary, and he has been embraced by establishment Clinton backers, including Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, his successor Chuck Schumer, and key labor leaders, including American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten and American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees President Lee Saunders. Sound like a couple of these people may practice Judaism and therefore may be classified as Jews. But you did have some, as I reported last week, some Jewish organizations call out the ADL, just like I called them out and said that's wrong for them to be attacking Keith Ellison with these smears. So anyway, this just further confirms that President Obama was never about change. He has always been about the status quo. So even when you have some of the longtime establishment types, including the person who got him to run for president, Harry Reid, even when they have fallen behind and say, okay, look, we're fighting for the future of the Democratic Party. It's clear we could not get the young voters out, the millennial vote. Were turned off by Hillary Clinton. We know the millennials are the ones who were heavily backing Bernie Sanders, and they are a crucial vote because we don't want to piss them off because look at what happened. That's why Hillary Clinton lost. When they started, the Clinton media machine started calling them Bernie Bros, coming up with fake stories to attack Bernie Sanders and his supporters and just the whole dirty stuff that they did, including not to mention the cheating. So the party leadership right now, they recognize that without these progressive voters, Democratic Party has no future. Okay? That these millennials seem to be more informed in the people activity area of politics than many of these so-called older people, when most of them are sold out or they just following behind what showcase black people tell them to do or showcase people in the Democratic Party tell them to do without looking at things and investigating for themselves. So this is what's going on. And President Obama has never been a change agent. The only change there been some positive changes in terms of legislation to come about during his presidency. Some. I will be a liar to tell you there were no good legislation that came out. But he had to be pushed. 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 He is a centrist. He is more of a Republican than he is a quote-unquote Democrat. But again, we can't get confused or think that we aren't talking about different wings on the same bird, but we're talking about what kind of policies, what kind of candidates will be supported moving forward. And I'm calling Keith Ellison an abolitionist candidate, and I'm saying I would like to see him. As an abolitionist, I endorse Keith Ellison. Why do I endorse Keith Ellison? Like I said at the beginning, he supports abolitionists in addition to some of the reform stuff in the criminal justice. He has been at the forefront of some of these bills, okay, during his time in Congress. And last year, he supported the Justice Is Not For Sale Act, which would abolish private prisons and jails in the United States. That's an abolitionist bill. When you're talking about abolishing something without exceptions, like the tricky 13th Amendment, you're talking about abolitionism. So I'm saying President Obama and most of these big money Democrats don't want to see Keith Ellison get it, either because he is not a bootlicker of Zionist Israel or because he's anti-slavery and he wants to abolish private prisons and jails, something Hillary Clinton had to be badgered into doing. She had to be put on the spot by young activists who were recording. She knew she was being recorded, and they said, what about private prisons and jails? You taking money from them. Then she had to be pushed into that. Same with Barack Obama. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the one who was forced to resign, she takes money from the private prison, a lobbyist as well, from these private prison companies. She's pro-slavery. So what you're seeing is not a fight between what I would say liberals and progressives in the Democratic Party. What you're seeing is, to a certain extent, it's not just all about it, but to a certain extent, the pro-slavery, those who think that you can reform slavery, and then those like Keith Ellison who know you have to abolish it. You can't reform private prisons and jails. You can't do it. You have to abolish them to no exception. On that alone, people who care about the politically correct issue of mass incarceration, which is really slavery, y'all should be supporting Keith Ellison and not falling for the showcasing the celebrity status of Barack Obama. Why should you trust this man? Why should you trust his judgment on anything? I don't know that much about Thomas Perez other than under him as labor secretary, they were paying prisoners slave wages in the federal government. So that's slavery, man. He's actively participating in slavery. I didn't see anything with his name attached to it talking about reforming how prisoners are paid for working on these prison plantations that these Fortune 500 companies take advantage of through insourcing and what have you. So this is what's going on, people. This is what's going on. So I hope Keith Ellison wins. Barack Obama, I'd be so glad when you're gone and out the door, but I know it won't be the last we hear of your sorry tale. I know you're going to go to Chicago, open up your presidential library, and then you're going to run a money-making scheme just like your boy Bill Clinton, since you down with the Clintons. So again, why would you trust the judgment of this man? This man endorsed Hillary Clinton when Hillary Clinton in 2008 was calling on racist crackers to assassinate him. Okay? Then he appoints her to be his Secretary of State. And look what she did. Set up a private server, dragged him into all this mess. This man has terrible judgment. So again, I can't wait to January 20th, although I know it won't be the last we hear from him. But this man has done a lot of damage to counter-racism efforts in this country because he is a weapon of mass confusion. And he's still confusing people. What is he? Why is he against Keith Ellison? Apparently, he don't care about Keith Ellison being a fellow African-American and all of that. He don't care. He ain't no kinship there. Barack Obama don't have no kinship, feel no kind of part of no black group. He'll play us when he need us, but he don't need us no more. So here he come out on his way out the door endorsing one of his current campaign members against Keith Ellison. So, again, just to let you know, this is his legacy. He said he was going to be remembered by his legacy if we didn't elect Hillary Clinton. No, you known by your legacy for even endorsing a woman who called for your assassination, showing that you don't even have any kind of black self-respect whatsoever. You just in it for the butter biscuits. That's all I have to say about that. Again, this man just to no end frustrates me. And I'll just, I just see him around for another 10, 20 years confusing people about the system. So, next story that I want to jump to when we come back from the station identification break, Democrats and their neoconservative Republican allies like John McCain, like Lindsey Graham down there in South Carolina, keep pushing this fake news that Russia hacked the U.S. election. Now, reports are coming out that from the different states, a state-by-state analysis with the data coming in, it didn't happen. There was no electronic vote hacking. There was no vote flipping. There was no voter fraud. Why do y'all keep letting these people lie to you and suck you into this when the information that you need to determine that they're lying to you is coming out in the news every day? So you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. I will be back on the other side of this quick break. Remember, you can give us a call at 866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056. Hit star to unmute yourself on the board, and then I will come to you. We'll be back on the other side.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast from behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc. The telephone number is 866-510-9025. All right, let's move to this next story from the New York Times. Let me throw that up, that screenshot up for our YouTube viewers. Help you find this stuff a little easier. All this talk of voter fraud across U.S. officials found next to none. That is an article by Michael Wines. It came out yesterday, December the 18th. Again, this is the New York Times. You can find it online at New York Times. After all the allegations, but wait a minute before I read this again. When I share these sources, I always assume that these people are going to lie to me or try to confuse me in some kind of way. So, just take note of the, because I took note of one of the things they say in here, who they focus on, or the allegations, who made the allegations that they're focusing on. Everybody made allegations now from both sides of the aisle, as they say. But let's see who they focus on, who the New York Times focus on. Okay, after all the allegations of rampant voter fraud and claims that millions had voted illegally, the people who supervised the general election last month in states around the nation have been adding up how many credible reports of fraud they actually received. The overwhelming consensus, next to none. Okay, so these are hey, if the CIA, some unnamed person, you don't know their name, don't see their faces, and this is secret information, so you can't see all the evidence. Why didn't they file a report then? If they so concerned, why didn't they file an official complaint at the local levels or what? Why didn't anybody file a complaint of these fraud that was going on? So anyway, the overwhelming consensus, as they said, for voter fraud was next to none. In an election in which more than 137.7 million Americans cast ballots, election and law enforcement officials in 26 states and the District of Columbia, Democratic-leaning, Republican-leaning, and in between, said that so far they knew of no credible allegations of fraudulent voting. Officials in another 8 states said they knew of only one allegation between them. A few states reported somewhat larger numbers of fraud claims that were under review. Tennessee counted 40 credible allegations out of some 4.3 million primary and general election votes. In Georgia, where more than 4.1 million ballots were cast, officials said they had opened 25 inquiries into suspicious voting or election-related activity. But inquiries to all 50 states, everyone but Kansas responded, found no states that reported indications of widespread fraud. Man, they be using some tricky language. And while additional allegations could surface as states wind up post-election reviews, their conclusions are unlikely to change significantly. So it goes on to talk about people like Donald Trump defined these unambiguously debunked repeated statements by President-elect Donald J. Trump that millions of illegal voters backed his Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton. They also refute warnings by Republican governors in Maine and North Carolina that election results could not be trusted. And they underscore what researchers and scholars have said for years. Fraud by voters casting ballots illegally is a minuscule problem, but a potent political weapon. The old notion that somehow there are all these imposters out there, people not eligible to vote, that are voting, is a lie, said Thomas E. Mann, a resident scholar at the Institute of Government Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. But it's what's being used in the states now to impose increased qualifications and restrictions on voting. So I'll stop it there. Again, when President Obama ran in 2008, you had record turnout here in North Carolina. You only had 5 cases of voter fraud, and most of those cases were like elderly people who voted twice by mistake, and another one I think voted in the wrong district or something that they was classifying as fraud. 5 cases out of millions, no voter fraud, but they pushed this out through their media, through their propaganda, right-wing propaganda outlets, and said that all this voting fraud is going on. We need to secure our elections and all this and that for a non-existent problem. So anyway, a lot of states that happened, they did pass voter ID laws. Here in North Carolina, they passed one, but it was declared unconstitutional because of Republicans from their internal communications. It was discovered in a Supreme Court lawsuit that they specifically designed what they were doing to suppress the quote-unquote African-American vote. So we didn't have to show IDs at the poll. But again, in North Carolina, Republicans run an election system. No cases of fraud. None. Even though the Republican governor tried to use that as an excuse for why he lost to the Democratic challenger in this state. But the Republicans had to rebuke him and say, no, there was none of those shenanigans. So again, then why isn't the New York Times also pointing out that the Russians did not hack any election, because you got a lot of confused people out there. I've even talked to some today who's saying they don't know what to believe. I keep hearing that the Russians hacked the election. See, when you say hacked an election, that implies that you're vote flipping and doing all that kind of stuff. That did not occur, okay? That did not occur. So what you're getting is a bunch of lies from people who don't want to lose power. They know Hillary Clinton is her girl, is their girl. They got her in her pocket. They know that there's no crime she isn't willing to commit to help these people gain access to capital, even if it's stealing other people's resources and other nations and what have you, like they did, or to stop other nations, what they call third world nations, from moving up in the world. That's the reason why they told those lies with Hillary Clinton at point on Muammar Gaddafi. So now this is what's going on. But it's all a bunch of nothing. And all these people are getting emotionally invested. And it's not really their fault, because it's the lying mainstream media that's helping. See, Hillary Clinton's trying to explain to all these billionaires and 100 millionaires and 10 millionaires and whatever, who gave all this money. She raised more money than Donald Trump. And how did you have all that money and you still lost? So she's making up finding excuses of why she lost. They lost because she's Hillary Clinton. That's why. That's why they lost. They just don't want to accept it. So they had to make up stories about sexism and genderism and all kind of, and instead of pointing the fingers at the people who need to have their fingers pointed at. Didn't nobody tell them to cheat during the Democratic primary? Now, regardless of who they say hacked the DNC email server, or whether or not, as some people credibly point out, this was a leak by a DNC insider who had ethics and wanted the people to know all the unethical stuff the DNC was doing to cheat Bernie Sanders out of the nomination, and they leaked it. Regardless of whether it was a hack or a leak, it was not a hack of the election. Stop confusing people. People, stop allowing yourself to be confused with words. Okay? Put everything in proper context. So there, whether it was a hack, whether it was a leak, I would say that, yeah, that just confirmed in people's mind who already had doubts about Hillary Clinton that, yes, they are a crook. These are unethical crooks. I already had doubts because she set up that private server off the books when she was told not to do that. She used the unsecure BlackBerry while in a foreign country, and then was sharing secret access, special access, I forget, where they know sharing these spies' names, CIA people names, and why would they even want her? She put their lives at risk. She exposed some of them using unsecured. And they already knew this about her and was like, no, I'm not voting for this woman. And now these emails come out and it just confirms that they are crooks. They are unethical people. And I know Donald Trump's a pig, but I ain't got no evidence of him cheating. And we're just tired of these, of the same old, the establishment. So we're gonna throw a monkey wrench into the system. And that monkey name is Donald J. Trump. That's what a lot of people did. That's why Hillary Clinton lost, because she's Hillary freaking Clinton. Man. So don't allow yourself to get sucked into this BS. There was no voting fraud. Putin did not hack the election and got Donald Trump in. No, no. Americans cast ballots. More of them in cast ballots for electors in their state. Therefore, he came out on top on the Electoral College, which votes today, which is our next story. Let me check the board again. If you have any questions or comments, you can chime in at 866-510-9025 or 702-802-5056. I'm willing to consider opposing alternative views. I mean, an alternative view doesn't necessarily mean that it's an opposing view, but I'm open. Okay. So this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm seeing reading in between the lines and based off of what I know is going on or the different reports that have been coming out since Hillary Clinton first announced she was running. So anyway, the next story. Now, the Electoral College meets today. Some people say that's a sham system, whatever. They've been doing it that way for hundreds of years. You can say that it's a sham cause more people in California, which is the most populous state, cast a ballot for Hillary Clinton. So that put her over the top for the popular vote. But you've been knowing, and she knew, and she conceded, but still trying to get people to overthrow the system for her and break rules for her. But they know that it's not who wins the popular vote. It's who wins the Electoral College. Did you not learn anything from 2000 Bush Gore? It's Electoral College. So all people trying to say that this is something fishy going on or fraud or all of that. No, it's not. They've been doing it. The process, they've been doing it for hundreds of years. The process is transparent. So I don't know why people are saying that. The Electoral College meets today, but you have Democrats, let me pull this article up for you, who are trying to get the electors to break the rules, like the DNC broke the rules, and not vote for Donald Trump, but instead go against the will of the state voters and put in Hillary Clinton. Now, I actually read one of them that one of the electors today said he wasn't voting for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, regardless of what his state rules say. He was casting one for Bernie Sanders. Again, let me see. Where is that story? Give me just a second. Let me pull this up. 538 electors are meeting today to cast their votes in the last step of the presidential election. But what is usually a formality has taken on new significance this year with Donald Trump's election and calls for electors to defect. In order to win the election, candidates need to reach 270 Electoral College votes. Trump reached that mark, garnering 306 electoral votes on November the 8th, compared to Hillary Clinton's 232 votes. Although he trails her in the popular vote. Why do they even put that in there? Why? Because they want to keep this controversy and make people think something is up. Ain't nothing up. Don't matter if she won California and some of the most populous states. She didn't win. She got California's electoral votes, which is a big chunk of them. But guess what? She didn't win enough anywhere else to win. So just stop it. Just stop. Wasting people time. Over the past 6 weeks, and this is the part that was interesting to me, stood out to me. Over the past 6 weeks, left-leaning groups have called for electors to break rules that require them to vote in a way reflective of their state's popular votes, a move that would make them faithless electors. See, they're being tricky with the words again. No. Again, she gets the electors for the states that she won the popular vote in. They're trying, but again, they are clearly calling for people to break rules. Again, they didn't learn their lesson from the Democratic primaries or what breaking the rules and then people calling you out on it and leaking what you're doing behind the scenes and people saying, I'm sorry, these are unethical people. And we don't need more unethical people in government. And I just can't, in good conscience, send a bunch of cheaters into power. Okay? So, but here we have them out front telling people to break the rules. Do you see the irony here? Do you see the irony here? And the fact that I'm seeing black people still giving their energy to this election is over and done with. What you need to be doing is paying attention to the people that's going to be appointed to these different positions. Their confirmation hearings coming up. Do you want to mount something to keep this person out? Like, what's his name? We'll talk about here in just a bit. Ben Carson from becoming Housing and Urban Development Secretary, because number one, he isn't qualified for the job. He isn't even an entrepreneur. Not really. He ain't built no business. It's selling books. It's not a business. I mean, it's not really. Come on. So the things that he has said. So that's what we need to be paying attention to. Now, all of this, of course, I'm talking about is if you are one of those people who are trying to either, we could use several words, change the system from within, undermine the system, to whatever you want to call it. All right? These are the kind of moves, see, that people don't make for the most part. They don't pay attention to. They don't participate in. And all they do is show up every 4 years and cast a ballot based off of what they see in the media, this celebrity figurehead and that celebrity figurehead, as they would call them, in terms of the internal politics and how do we get to that person. And they have not, they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. You got to we as a people have to become more politically mature, because none of these other groups take any time off from politics. There are battles going on right now, again, pointing back to Keith Ellison, who supports abolitionist legislation. They're trying to keep him out. Why? Because they want to keep practicing slavery. That's why. So again, these are corrupt, crooked people, and this is just more confirmation that they don't care about no rules. And how dare you, you know, especially you people who giving your energy to that monster Hillary Clinton and to the Democratic Party right now, and the old guard, let's say, you know, what Barack Obama represents, the old guard, the establishment, the status quo, the big money contributors and controllers and what have you. This is more evidence that these people are corrupt and they are unethical. And if you're giving your energy to these people, how dare you ever talk to your own children if they break a rule at school or if they don't follow the quote unquote rules of society? Because we got people openly advocating for rule breaking. Because it will, in their mind, benefit them. So since it's going to benefit us, let's just break the rules. Let's throw all the rules out the window and all this and that. And then you want to preach to your children on Sunday? You want to preach on, you know, to people on Sunday about lying, about being crooked, about any kind of unethical behavior? You want to tell your children to follow the rules and to just work hard and study hard, and you don't have to cheat to get ahead? No, that ain't what we telling our young people, are we? By endorsing and following behind these crooks. I don't like Donald Trump, but guess what? Guess what? I am not going to participate in this kind of shenanigans to deny him. Once he gets in there, I have to formulate my battle plan, my plan of attack. What can I do to get what I want from this man? So anyway, that's a story that I thought people should be aware of. I'm going to go ahead and take another station identification break, and some of the other stories that we'll hit on when I come back. Ben Carson, again, maybe I can Google this. Somebody can Google this. Remember, he was met with Trump down there in Florida and to endorse Donald Trump and talk about how they discussed him getting a cabinet position. That was illegal. That's illegal. They do business like that now. Again, we're talking about rule breakers, law breakers. The rules are for the common people, not for them to follow. All right. They did not get to be billionaires following rules and regulations and all that kind of stuff. So this goes on all the time. But it's just rare that they see, this go to show you Ben Carson don't know what he's doing in politics. Because he would know that's illegal. And he wouldn't be running his mouth, being boastful, saying, yeah, I met with Donald Trump, and I'm going to endorse him, and I might get a cabinet position, as we talked about a cabinet position. See, now it comes up later, and then that's illegal. That's illegal. You can't do that. So now that can be used against Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Ben Carson don't need to be the next HUD secretary. Let me tell you why he doesn't need. These are some of the things that he has said about housing and urban development. This is the agency that works on public housing and helping people find affordable housing and what have you, to help people get back on their feet, being that most people ain't paid a living wage. But Ben Carson has a right-wing white supremacist view of public housing. He does. He really, really does. And they like to racialize this issue, not realizing that it's probably just like it's more white people getting food stamps, EBT cards, than black people, than anybody else. Same thing with Section 8 housing. Man, I can't tell you how many of these white people in this 80% white county I live in are living in Section 8 housing. Whether they're getting the vouchers for a trailer in a trailer park, or whether they filling out applications for the public housing complexes like they have in Mount Holly, where it's based on your income, based on your job and what have you, a scale of sliding, you know, fee scale, so that poor people can afford to live in a nice little town like Mount Holly. It's mostly white people, man. But they will racialize this issue to get white people behind slashing funding and stuff. So that's Ben Carson. That's Ben Carson. He falls into that crowd. So, but this is one of the things he said last year. Last year, let me pull up the actual article where he accused Hood of social engineering. Yes, social engineering. He said in an article on that showed up on the right wing. Well, he actually wrote this article. Actually, he wrote this last year, July 23rd, experimenting with failed socialism again. So again, here we're talking about an ILD. We're talking about a fanatic who follows a certain political ideology, a racist ideology. Don't matter that he's black. Look up the term proxy racism. I coined it. You can find information about that term by Googling, as it has been in use for a couple of years now. But this is what he wrote. Again, talking just like them racist crackers. He said, remember busing that brilliant social experiment that was to usher in a new era of racial utopia in America? Undaunted by the failed socialist experiments of the 1980s, the Obama administration has recently implemented a new Department of Housing and Urban Development rule designed to desegregate housing by withholding funds from communities that fail to demonstrate their projects affirmatively further fair housing. To place this in context, it's useful to look back at the failure of school busing. After Brown versus Board of Education effectively ended de jure discrimination in public accommodations from schools to housing, many whites in the South continued to flout Brown and did everything they could to keep blacks out of all white schools. In response, various municipalities mandated busing as a means of forcibly integrating public education, and by fiat, ensuring that educational funding was not unequally distributed based on race. The rationale was that if white parents had to send their children to black school, they would help to ensure that those schools were better equipped. But by almost every objective, the experiment failed. Not only was there no real statistical improvement in school integration, the percentage of blacks attending majority black schools from 1972 to 1980 moved from 63.6% to 63.3%. But the program was unpopular among both blacks and whites. Again, he is getting way off. There is no comparison in what we're taught, what is being discussed here in terms of this urban housing rule. And I'll get to some of those details. But this is how they do you, though. This is how they confuse you with buckets of words, as people have said before, and using examples that aren't the right context. And so anyway, everybody knows that school integration never did really happen. And this is just hard data, but this also flies in the face of black people out there who say that integration killed the black community in schooling or in the education system because they still segregated. It was only a 0.3% change. So I guess you can't use that as an excuse and say integration is what killed it, because they never integrated. They just said they did. They snatched out a few kids like me who had scored pretty high on standardized testing. They picked us and they snatched us out of our black schools and sent us across town to these white schools and what have you. But what they did not do is increase or evenly spread the funding to the schools. So they just showcased a couple of token black kids like myself. I was in Detroit. Ben Carson grew up in Detroit as well. In the 70s, when I was ripped out of my school, I think I was in elementary school, and I completed elementary school, and then they sent me to that white school for first grade and what have you. I might have been older than that. Seemed like I was maybe second, third grade. But there was no real improvement in terms of what they were trying to target. So anyway, that has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with housing. Now, he says that this contributed to a blighted inner cities in which poverty and school segregation became even more concentrated. Now, how did it become even more concentrated if it was only a 0.3 change? To me, it was basically no movement whatsoever. So even his own data that he's sharing contradicts what he's saying, and they want to put this man in charge of something. Let him go. Let him be in charge of separating conjoined twins and doing brain surgery, because he's fairly competent in that. He went to medical school. He has gifted hands in the medical field. Let him focus on that. Matter of fact, he might be better suited to become attorney. Surgeon general. Okay. Usually, typically, they put a doctor in those positions, surgeon general, U.S. surgeon general. Why are they putting this man? Because they know he has an ideology that's racist that they share, and that he's going to ruin it. He's going to tear it up. Again, I want the Trump administration to cause irreparable damage to USA Inc. so we can dissolve the corporation and start over fresh and possibly come together, implement a new system based on justice instead of one based on slavery and racism. That's what I would like to see happen. So this is the article. Let me see, throw that up there for people to see. That's from the New York Times article, but I clicked through on their link to the Washington Times. Now, it says it is true that the Fair Housing Act and other laws have greatly reduced explicit discrimination in housing, but significant disparities in housing availability and quality persist. To address them, the Obama administration's new agency rules rely on a tortured reading of the fair housing laws to empower the Department of Housing and Urban Development to affirmatively promote fair housing, even in the absence of explicit discrimination. Let me scroll down. The new rule would not only condition the grant of HUD funds to municipalities on building affordable housing, as is the case today, but would require that such affordable housing be built primarily in wealthier neighborhoods with few current minority residents, and that the new housing be aggressively marketed to minorities. In practice, the rule would fundamentally change the nature of some communities from primarily single-family to largely apartment-based areas by encouraging municipalities to strike down housing ordinances that have no overtly or even intended discriminatory purposes, including race-neutral zoning restrictions on lot sizes and limits on multi-unit dwellings, all in the name of promoting diversity. He is being he's being very deceptive here. What it does, he's trying to scare rich white people. What he's saying is, oh, they gonna let all them poor niggers into your rich white cracker neighborhood, your little gated cracker community. Oh, they gonna now start building affordable housing or allowing poor people to get what they call that, a voucher 8 program, and that might bring down the housing values and what have you. Or they're mandating that housing, new affordable housing complexes be built in gated communities in your cracker neighborhood, rich, wealthy cracker neighborhood. See, he's lying. What they're saying is that you can't build these new affordable housing in blighted areas that already exist, like food deserts. Why would you build affordable housing for poor people in an area where they can't access any kind of resources that many of these communities, in fact, are lacking, like libraries, like fresh food markets, even grocery stores, when we see all the food deserts and whatnot, or these areas that have been tainted by lead paint, you know, the rundown blighted housing that's out there already? See, that's what Ben Carson want to keep them Negroes in those kind of areas, in the ghetto. And all the Obama administration, and y'all know I don't praise Obama for any reason whatsoever. I just simply report the facts. And the fact is, this is part of some change things that have happened that I would say are towards justice, working towards justice. Because they're saying that, like in the New York Times article, they're saying that when you put affordable housing in mixed economic communities, not race, they don't use the term race, but economic, meaning poor people, for housing for poor people. Let's stop calling them poor people. Let's say struggling people. Okay. When you put those type of housing in a neighborhood, in a community like where I live, let's say in a rural little town like Mount Holly, which has everything it needs, has a library, has access to shopping. The only thing they don't have is public housing. But guess what? The public housing units that they have, the housing complex that they have, is right across the street from all that stuff. Some of them people can walk to work and what have you. And that families, poor families, when they are in these sort of mixed income neighborhoods where you have homeowners as well as these complexes, that those people in the housing complex that need assistance tend to improve their finances and eventually can get off of public housing. That is what the new rules that the Obama administration was talking about last year. And that's what you got Ben Carson calling social engineering, using codified racist language, saying they're trying to send poor niggers into the rich white neighborhoods. That's what he's saying in this article. This man does not need to become housing and urban development chief. He should be stopped at all costs. Y'all need to be calling your senators and saying, hey, he should be disqualified because of what he said during the Republican campaign. Y'all might need to investigate whether Donald Trump promised this cabinet position to Ben Carson in exchange for an endorsement based off of what Ben Carson said to the media after he met privately behind closed doors with Donald Trump. That's how you do that. This man does not need to be in this position. Will this affect me? No, it's not going to affect me. But most of the issues I talk about don't affect me. That's the difference between me and a lot of other people. I talk about other people's problems or other people's potential problems instead of worrying about whether or not it's just going to affect me personally. If I'm not personally affected by it, I don't care. I don't care. Let them eat cake. I don't care. You know, so I do care. I do care because what happens to these people? What happens if they start cutting off funding and these poor crackers that's up in the projects start getting thrown out of public housing? And then where they going to go? What's going to happen to the neighborhood then? Are we going to see tents and stuff popping up under the bridge on the Catawba River? Are they going to be living up in tents in the woods and stealing stuff from people's property, coming on our property, trying to steal whatever they can get their hands on? So I care about poor people having access to the stuff that they need so that they don't be stealing from us, all right? So that's how I look at it. That's one of the ways I can look at it. This man does not need to become the hood chief. The last thing that I want to share with you, let me pull up this article. This news clip. Make sure I got the right one. See, Black Talk Radio News. Because I want to talk about this book that has come out, and this thug that used to work for the CIA who interrogated Saddam, and some of the information minus the propaganda. They finna hit you with some red, white, and blue propaganda. Some old Saddam was a dictator. Everybody's a freaking dictator to these people except for them, right? But they dictate to you and I every day what we can and cannot do, and will throw us into slavery and make billions of dollars annually off our bodies. Saddam didn't have prison plantations anywhere approaching the numbers that we see here in this so-called land of the free, which is a crop. But let me pull up this news clip. But they're talking about Saddam when they found him in that spider hole and then interrogated him and what he had to say. Because this just goes to show you these people are a bunch of liars. What's today? 12/19. Okay, I do need to go ahead. I think those clips are in another folder. Let me see. All podcasts. Pull this one over here. And let's pull that one. See if I can find the right one. Y'all bear with me. Okay, that is not it. What are you doing? Scotty, today is 12/19/2016. I'm in 2015. Okay, let's see what we got here. Sure, it's one of these, but the guy was interviewed on Fox News today. And I just looking at his face like, man, you need to be on trial for human rights crimes. And y'all sitting up there talking about Saddam. But let me see if we can find that particular one. Here it is, I believe, 247. I thought it was a little longer than that.
To move on to the latest on the Trump transition, it is a decisive day as presidential electors.
Okay, that's not it.
Hard to believe 10 years ago, dictator Saddam Hussein was found hiding out in a spider hole after years of war crimes. His capture, a momentous occasion for the free world.
Our next guest was a key commander in the hunt and capture of the late president of Iraq. He wrote about that operation in his new memoir, We Got Him. Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Steve Russell joins us now. Colonel, thanks a lot for coming on. We're honored to have you. I remember well. I was in Baghdad the day he was captured, and I remember being so impressed by what you all did. But I also remember wondering, and I still don't know the answer, how did he hide out for 6 months?
He was protected by half a dozen families that were related to him by blood, by marriage, and long association. And they formed the key social network around him, much like a mafia don. He was protected by the family. And they, most all of them, were from the Tikrit area, and that's where he gained his support.
How did you guys find him?
Well, once we learned how that family network was and his system of bodyguards around it, it was just a matter of developing a strategy to go after those groups. And early successes showed that if we went after those key families, that we could get on his trail and it might be possible to get him.
So what was his reaction when you all grabbed him? Was he defiant?
Well, initially, he was stunned. He got a little uppity at the hole when he was pulled out. There were a half a dozen soldiers led by a guy I'll call John, his team. When he was brought out of the hole, he was a little defiant when they were checking him for tattoos on his hands and tried to shove one of the soldiers away, a stupid thing to do. And so they straightened him out, and that's how he got the cut on his mouth and on his eye.
Why were they checking for tattoos on his hands?
He had a three-dot tattoo on his left hand for God, Country, Leader, which was also the national Fedayeen mark. And then on the back of his right hand, he had a sunburst tattoo. We all knew that he had those marks, so they were doing a quick check just for verification.
How did the soldiers keep it together in that moment, looking face-to-face with Saddam Hussein?
I think that all of us during that time were very focused on our mission. You realize going into the raid, you've got the best intelligence that you've ever had. And there was an expectation during that day that this was the best chance we had had up to that point. So you're very focused on all of the things, all of the units that were involved.
Things really fell apart, though, after he was captured in that country. Talk about what led to that. Why did things just start to crumble?
Well, I think what you saw initially was Saddam was an inspiration to the Baathist-led insurgency. Many, and wrongly, were reading the violence in the Tikrit and Sunni Triangle area as being created by heavy-handedness. In the reality, it was Saddam and his groups that were trying to create turmoil where we would lose political will and go home. After Saddam was captured and so much of that network was thinned out, then the insurgency transitioned over to Zarqawi, who was with al-Qaeda, and it got very, very ugly.
Lieutenant Colonel Steve Russell, one of the commanders responsible for the capture of Saddam Hussein 10 years ago.
So that's Commander Steve Russell, war criminal. Y'all invaded a sovereign nation. You had no right to do so on some lying intelligence. Talking about this man had weapons of mass destruction. Now, you note that they never brought that up. And did you pay attention to the words that they were using? Trying to make it sound like, these families that was loyal to Saddam and hiding Saddam were comparing them to the mafia. Okay. What about the Clinton crime family and all the coddling and all the protectionism and the FBI, just the whole government? We know this woman a crook, a criminal. We got her on tape admitting to a plot to assassinate Muammar Gaddafi, admitting her roots. She had herself videotaped, which that's even a crime. That was classified information at the U.S. role in that operation. Here she is sitting over there in Afghanistan talking about, oh, we came, we saw, he died. This was a head of state of a U.S. ally. And now what's happened to Libya? The same thing that happened to Iraq. You turned it into a terrorist failed state. That's what happened. So they use these words to try to demonize. I'm not saying Saddam was a nice person, but guess what? I know USA Inc. ain't nice. I know they engage in crimes every day. They were backing Hussam. He was their U.S. dictator. So any war crimes or crimes against humanity he committed, it should have been Ronald Reagan, Donald Rumsfeld, and a number of other people sitting right there next to Saddam at his trial in Iraq if y'all was going to put him on trial for killing Kurds with chemical weapons that he bought from the United States. The pictures are out there of Donald Rumsfeld during the Reagan administration meeting with this guy. But notice how they point out, oh, Saddam did this, Saddam did that. He was such a terrible person. But they failed to point out that it was U.S. policy to support this terrible person, and they aided and abetted him in the terrible things that they say he did. They did that. Let me share a couple of excerpts from the article that from Fox News that I thought that you didn't hear in that interview. These points weren't brought up. Hussein, who was hanged and killed in 2006 for crimes against humanity, was frequently defiant while being interviewed and even mocked the U.S. rationale for the war, that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. This is what Donald Trump said the other day about the last week about the CIA. These are the people, that corporate media that's telling you right now that Russia hacked the elections, are the same ones that was reporting this stuff from the CIA as if it was a fact that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. So as the CIA and working with U.S. military capture Saddam and interrogate him, he laughing at him, talking about we have weapons of mass destruction. We been got rid of that. He said Hussein told some dude named Nixon, Iraq is not a terrorist nation. We did not have a relationship with Osama bin Laden and did not have weapons of mass destruction, and we're not a threat to our neighbors. But the American president, George W. Bush, said Iraq wanted to attack his daddy and said we had weapons of mass destruction. Y'all remember that? George W. Bush. Oh, he was a plot to kill my daddy, to assassinate my daddy and all this. And the CIA said this and that. And y'all ain't seen no proof, and y'all just bought into it. Y'all just bought into the weapons of mass destruction. And this is roundly known as a lie. Here we get more confirmation. But nobody that I've seen in this particular interview, nobody's even pointing this out. If they hanged Saddam Hussein for war crimes, what war crimes are they talking about? They're talking about in 1988, the Hala Baja massacre, in which thousands of mostly Kurdish civilians were killed by Iraqi chemical weapons during the Iran-Iraq war. Hussein grew angry. Now, again, he also killed a whole bunch of Iranians with these U.S.-made weapons of mass destruction. But you don't hear them even in this article even acknowledging the human rights crimes committed against Iranians. You see how these people operate. See, this is why it's important to be able to read, to comprehend what you read, and to have more than one source of information. And definitely it cannot be all corporate media sources, because they lie all the time. They have working relationships with the U.S. intelligence community to lie to you. Look up Operation Mockingbird, as we talked about last week. Look up that latest Intercept article about so-called journalists for major publications here in the United States submitting their stuff for proofreading by the CIA. So if he was put on trial for human rights crime for this chemical weapons, damn it, then Ronald Reagan's guilty too. And Donald Rumsfeld guilty too. And he's still alive. Somebody should drag him out, whatever hole he's in, and put him on trial. We got the evidence. This is common knowledge, people, for those who are in the know about these sort of things. that all the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had, he got from Ronald Reagan to kill Iranians specifically, but he also used them against the Kurds, because the Kurds are still fighting for their autonomy. Parts of Iraq, Syria, Turkey, that's an ongoing conflict right now. And so he used, I'm not justifying him using chemical weapon. What I'm saying is, if he's guilty, so is the United States government. So how dare these people go on TV, write these books, and act like they some kind of heroes or something? You're freaking criminals. You are the biggest purveyors of violence on the face of the planet, as Martin Luther King once said. You are responsible for the million plus deaths that have occurred since the invasion of Iraq, destabilizing that country. You are the reason that terrorists have been killing people nonstop ever since that invasion. You. And then these people go on these propaganda outlets like Fox News and act like they are heroes or they're the good guys. But this particular interview did just further give you evidence that Saddam didn't have weapons of mass destruction, if you didn't already know that. So the whole invasion was based on a lie. Based on a lie. But you was willing to put Hillary Clinton in there, wasn't you? Hillary Clinton and them knew that was a lie. This is all because a war is a racket. This is the destabilization of purposeful destabilization of that region of the world for different reasons. For Saddam, he was going to stop using the American petrodollar to sell oil. He was only going to take euros. So again, as I talked about last week, they had to come up with some lies to go in there and invade him. Because you would think a sovereign nation has the right to sell its goods in whatever currency it wants to. But again, the American economy is monopoly. It's monopoly money. You have to kill people in order for your money to have any kind of value. And if I had to sacrifice, if I had to not have this convenience or that convenience so that we can implement a world that is based on justice, where no, where my standard of living doesn't depend on somebody being murdered and resources stolen halfway around the world, then I will give up any of these amenities and conveniences that I have. Okay? That's why I want USA Inc. to crumble so we can start over. Because apparently it's evident to me that we are just on a continuous path of death and destruction for the masses of the people. Not the rich, wealthy people, not the politicians, if you will, but you and I, people like us. See, that's when I first started looking at the world like this, was when I was in the first Gulf War, while simultaneously reading Malcolm X's biography, which just opened my mind up to different questions about the direction my life was headed as a soldier for white supremacy. And I started looking at them Iraqis as human beings who were out there doing nothing but defending their homeland, and we were the invaders. So look at that place. Reagan's dead and in his grave, and people are still dying because of U.S. policy under him. U.S. policy under him. So that's my program for today. I will be back on air tomorrow. Tomorrow's Tuesday, the 20th, with another broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time will be Tando Radio Show. So in the meantime, you can listen to some message music on the station. But I just want people to do research, I want people to get accustomed to never trusting anything that anybody says, not even me, without doing verifying it independently, finding more sources. They say for a source to be, for an issue or something that's being reported to be credible, you need to have two or three sources. But then you, that rule don't even work when your two or three sources are ABC, CNN, Fox News, just any of these corporate state propaganda outlets who, again, have long-established ties to the U.S. government to lie to the people. Again, I don't have to make up stuff. I leave that to them. They the ones who had to make up stuff and lie to you. I do my research, and that's why I share links to whatever I'm discussing. And if what I'm linked to is propaganda, I give you I give you something to be aware of, an alternative view. So make sure that y'all be safe the rest of this day behind these enemy lines. Don't want anybody to become a slave. This country, contrary to popular opinion, did not abolish slavery in 1865. They transformed it to the prison plantations, and that's why the United States has the world's largest prison slave labor camp system in the world. Come to these, when you recognize this, it'll make you start looking at the world and where you live differently, and hopefully it'll motivate you to do something to bring about that change we so desperately need. All right, peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Step amazing, couldn't it be crazy? Oh, would you step?